ever-changing world, Conscious Co-Creation Productions presents A Voice of Truth and Inspiration, resonating a vibration of love and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions as we, as one, strive for higher and higher planes of existence. Always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you have never felt before. Life changes with Filippo. And now, your host, Filippo Voltaggio.
Thank you, John. Wow. This has been an amazing week with so much happening in so many ways, even here at Life Changes with Filippo, but of course all over the world. And most of you know what I'm referring to. This is a week where some very special people have left the planet by passing on. Farrah Fawcett and Michael Jackson, of course, and I've been thinking about goodbyes. And, you know, it's interesting. When I was a kid, I remembered my parents sometimes dropping off friends who had visited for a while and didn't have a car to get back, so they would drop off their friends to their friends' homes. And I remember how just as the friend would get out of the car, my parents would say, "Oh, it was so nice spending time with you," or "Thank you so much," or something like that. And it was always rushed. It was forced at the last minute. It was interesting to me. It's like there were quiet moments in the car where nobody said anything. And then at the last minute, as they're closing the door and driving off, saying, "It was great, thank you for coming." And I thought, well, why wouldn't they? So growing up, I remember being on dates or being with friends and me being the one either dropping them off or being dropped off. And I would do this, and then as I'm opening the door to get out or they're opening the door to get out, I would say, "Thanks for spending time with me." And they would, you know, rush something out and off we would go. And so I made a conscious choice. And I said, from now on, I am going to use the time of the drive up until the time it's time to get out of the car, either one of us, and tell them, whoever it is, how much I enjoyed the evening or how much I look forward to the next time or to plan a next time. And at first, I have to say, it was really weird because people would ask me, "Are you dropping me off here?" We're so conditioned that it's supposed to happen at the last second. And they'd say, "You're not dropping me off yet. We still got another couple miles," or something like that. And I'd say, "No, I'm just telling you now." And they'd say, "Oh, that's kind of weird." And it felt weird. And it was hard getting into the habit of telling people before dropping them off. And before long, I started to do that while people were still at the house or still at my apartment or wherever it was at the time that I was living. Or while I was still at a party, "I'm so glad you came," or "I'm so glad you're here." And people would say, "Are you throwing me out?" And I'd say, "No, I'm just saying I'm really happy that you're here." And after all these years, people either know me by now, or even my new friends, I'm attracting people that kind of figure out who I am right off the bat. And people really seem to appreciate it, and they feel good in that moment. And a very interesting thing happens. That feel good lasts until they leave. And you almost don't have to say anything when they do leave, just a hug or a handshake or whatever it is, a kiss, because you've said it already and you've had that time together. And it's making me think of saying goodbye and passing all this that has happened this week and how with, for example, my father, who was a very good man and he wanted harm to nobody, he had his faults, like so many of us. However, there were people, for some reason, seemed to hold a grudge against him, and I can't even, as an adult, for the life of me, figure that out. But that's how maybe those people were. But I remember some of those people who gave my father heartache, for no apparent reason to me, still to this day, called after my father passed away and spoke to my mother saying, "Oh, he was such a good man and how we're going to miss him." And I remember back then not being able to hold my temper. And I would yell from the background, knowing who was on the other line, "Tell him they should have called before. Tell him he's not here anymore and it does no good." Because they're just trying to make themselves feel better at that point. It has nothing to do with the person that passed away with a heartache. So I've been thinking about that, how so many people are saying so many nice things about Michael Jackson. And I know they're all true. And I just wonder what would have happened if those things were said while Michael Jackson was still alive, instead of waiting till he passed. And that if he were still alive today, how there still would be some this against him, or people would still be writing these things about him. All the same people that are saying all these good things now would be saying and doing things to hurt him. And now people are mourning that we have lost somebody who could have given us so much more entertainment and joy, and that had been given us so much joy over the years, and now we don't have that anymore. I figure we probably could have had that for another 40 years or so if people would have been nice to Michael Jackson. And sure, he had his problems like everybody else. But it's just interesting. I'm not saying, you know, we should have, could have. I'm just saying it's an interesting observation to me. And it's interesting, too, what he died of. According to Louise Hay, who wrote a book called You Can Heal Your Life, in the middle of the book, she talks about what different illnesses mean. And the heart, she says, represents the center of love and security, something that, from all I could tell, Michael Jackson had none of. And so a heart attack is squeezing all the joy out of the heart. Interesting. Because one could argue that Michael Jackson no longer had much joy, and that the world wasn't offering him much joy. She says that heart problems are long-lasting emotional problems, lack of joy and hardening of the heart. And how many of us people who are now saying all these good things about Michael Jackson had hardened our hearts to him? Maybe because he did have a lot of faults, but who's the first one that doesn't? I just think it's interesting. Maybe if we take this as a reminder to look at the people today who we're not talking to, or who we are talking about and not favorably, and say, if that person were to die today, would we be saying nice things, and we'd be saying we missed out on such and such or what have you? And if so, maybe we could be telling that person, I don't care for this behavior that you do, or this part about what you do affects me this way, but you sure do bring this, this, and this, and I just want you to know that. Maybe they don't have to be in your life. Maybe you don't have to talk to them, but maybe then when they do pass on, if they pass on before you, you won't feel that need and that remorse and that guilt. Maybe even you'll come to find out that what they did, they were doing it to try and get love from you. So I thought that would be appropriate to say in memory of some of these special people that have passed on, and I hope that helps. It certainly has helped me. Now, speaking of helping, our guest today is a man who has helped so many people do so many amazing things, and I could tell him on and on. I haven't known him all that long, but every time I talk to him, I just tell him, And I could talk to you for hours, and I'm so interested in all that you're about, and it's absolutely true. He is an inventor, a serial entrepreneur with 12 inventions and patents. He has been dubbed the Minister of Ideas by the media and has been featured in the leading media of our time, Wall Street Journal, Inc., Entrepreneur, This Week, Time, USA, Today, America Online, I mean, on and on, NPR. He has appeared on Oprah, CNN, Good Morning America, CNBC. As a matter of fact, he had his own show on the Business Radio Network called The New Venture Money Show. And he has done some amazing things that now have become part of our culture, like help founding Earth Day. He was one of the co-founders of Earth Day. He has founded Green to Gold Incubators International, something that we're going to learn about today, but something that we're going to be hearing about and how it really is helping us and the world. And then something else that we'll talk about today, Yippee, Y-I-P-E-E. He has created the Great Idea Contests and imagination fairs and Yippie programs for kids. Let's welcome to the show Alan Trattner. Alan, how are you?
Hello, Filippo. What an amazing introduction. And even before that, your wonderful sentiments about Michael Jackson, you were right on about that kind of remorse and talking to people while they're still here with us, sharing that kind of love. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Alan. You know, ironically, now that you, as soon as you said that, it actually ties in beautifully, and I hadn't even thought of this until you said it. We're going to talk about how we could be kind to the planet while the planet is still here instead of having remorse when we lose our resources or the whole planet.
And it is people and the flora and fauna and the biosphere and the planet, and we're all linked together. And as the very famous saying goes, you know, we all travel together as both passenger and crew on spaceship Earth, this planet that keeps us alive, the life support systems. And we're reaping havoc with it and polluting it. But there's so many wonderful, wonderful positive alternatives and solutions for what could be a utopian economy for this whole planet that raises the lives of everyone on the planet with a clean energy future and sustainable green resources and products that are renewable and recycled. It's such possibilities. That's what I'm all about and have devoted several decades of my life and career to trying to foster.
You sure have. As a matter of fact, I did not even scratch the surface of your bio. As a matter of fact, I do not even have your complete bio because I've heard it's like 16 pages or something like that. You're one of the few people that have done so much that I know of, and the beauty of it is so much of it, if not all of it, has been dedicated to helping people not only in their consciousness but create things that can help us all and the world.
Yeah, I think it goes hand in hand. It's about something that people call social responsibility to your fellow man and environmental responsibility to the whole planet and the life support system. Those two elements permeate everything that we do and how we've tried to work with children and with seniors, which I call wisepreneurs, entrepreneurs that are coming back into the fold, and everything in between. Our mission, and a lot of people that support me, and some wonderful folks from Hollywood to the business community to banking to investment to government, the folks that recognize that what we're doing in this country and abroad know that this is where the future has to go. It must go. And we're proud to have been part of that original leading rush, the pioneers, the pathfinders that brought us to this point today where countries are embracing it. The newly elected president of the United States is pushing for the green economy and making money available as stimulus and to try to get renewable energy going. And this is an important juncture for the whole history of mankind. It may even lead to the potential for a peaceful universe, peaceful world, if we can try to raise ourselves above resource wars and the competitiveness that goes on between countries. I think we have a great chance here with the so-called environmental movement or the clean energy movement, and that's what we're all about.
Alan, I don't even know the story, and actually I can't wait to hear. How did you actually get involved? And all this time I haven't even asked you, how did it start? What was your inspiration to save the world?
For me? that's interesting. When I was a kid, here's the story as my parents tell me. This is a wonderful, and my siblings. I probably came out of the womb drawing, which just had this, one of my parents both were artists, and I got the genes, I guess, and I came out, and I think my father had told me that I drew a snake. The very first thing I ever did was draw a snake. So I drew the head on one piece of paper and then attached reams and reams of paper long to draw the whole body to the tail. And that was my first piece of art. And he got so excited about that, he used to bring home rolls of old newspaper from the Detroit newspaper that was running the end of the rolls of the big newspaper presses, so I could draw whatever I wanted to. So that ability to communicate and draw and that talent that was infused into me gave me an edge. And throughout my young life, I was winning all kinds of awards in art and design and innovation and science, and I won the Scholastic Art and Science Awards. And one of the things that was really great is my teachers recognized that, as well as my family. So I used to do all kinds of extracurricular projects, like go to the Museum of Art and go to the history museums and deal with projects and take on extra assignments and really cultivate that. That's why we invented the YIPPIE you mentioned, because I believe what's happened to my life and the stimulation and the mentorship and tutorship needs to be given to everyone. Because every human being's creative. I've traveled, as you've seen on my resume, all over this planet. I've lectured in Moscow and Stanford and Mexico and Canada and you name it. And everyone's creative. Everybody has that wonderful God-given ability to invent. Just most people just don't even know what to do with it. So that's part of what we do. And so I grew up winning lots of attention and then and getting mentored and tutored and people recognizing it. And I think that's the big problem with a lot of folks in our world. The kibosh comes on early where people say it's silly, it's stupid, don't do it, you're weird, forget it, do what everybody else is doing instead of cultivating creativity and imagination and trying to make a difference and letting people sparkle. And I'm all about recognizing that and being the greatest cheerleader of everybody that we encounter. So my history is part of why I want to give back in that sense. I achieved great early success and have continued to have success as an entrepreneur and inventor in projects that I've been involved with and lots of people helping. Nobody does this all by themselves, but now we have an organization that spans the whole world, has 40,000 members that are inventing the future, and we're about to create 17 of these Green to Gold incubators throughout this country and abroad, and I'm very proud of the kind of spectrum. We just got an email this week about China wanting it. This Friday, the French embassy is coming to talk to us about having a green to gold in their country. Israel, South Korea, Australia. Very exciting things are happening and people waking up to what we're doing.
I can't wait to get into green to gold because I certainly know a little bit about it and I've gotten to see the facilities, the incubator and some of the products. And so I can't wait to share that with our audience. But before we get into that, let's establish what green is. According to you, we hear green everything nowadays or a lot of things where before it was made fun of. I remember growing up. Now it's become a buzzword and I don't even know what's green and real and what's, you know, so what's green and what's real or what's real.
Well, that's interesting. I think the analogy of green came from obviously nature and the forest and the trees and the green of the valleys and everything else. The color obviously represents what people call the earth movement. I remember at the very beginning it wasn't called the green movement. We were talking about the planet Earth as seen from, it's funny that the juxtaposition of the original creation of Earth Day and the Santa Barbara oil spill, which many attribute to being the beginning of the modern environmental movement because of the coverage that was done of the media around the world when that happened, where our headquarters are in Santa Barbara, California. But it was really the original astronauts traveling to the moon, Buzz Aldrin and everybody that was on that mission, with the Earthrise picture, the planet Earth, this beautiful, incredible marble out there in space that is our home. And that was our original symbols. My original Earth Day flag was the planet Earth on this blue background. So the green movement over the years was started very much in the alternative culture, and it has now permeated, and what people call green means the sustainable economy and thinking about how we use our world and how we recycle and where clean energy comes from. All of this now, the umbrella under green, some of it misused, and that's what they call greenwashing, where major corporations will tell the consumer in their marketing and public relations campaigns that they're doing so and so and doing this and it's helping the environment and all that, where the reality of it is when you really check the facts that they're doing very little, and on the counter to that, there's somewhere off in some rainforest, you know, cutting it down. So the whole issue of greenwashing is a big problem, but there's also many companies that I get these newsletters, the Center for Corporate Responsibility. The shareholders are driving the boards of directors to be aware of this. It comes from the kids up and from really the grassroots, the green grassroots up that's shaping our culture. Then the media obviously has picked up. And then I think the big thing that happened, whether you fully embrace the exact figures and the exact permanence of this problem was Al Gore's amazing push about global climate change and his incredible movie, The Inconvenient Truth. It did waken the entire planet. It got so much attention with his Nobel Prize and the Oscar that it changed the complexion completely of the argument. So whereas some might argue whether global warming is affecting us right this minute or it's going to take a long time, it'll never happen, I'll leave that to other people to debate. We all know that on this precious planet, our population, which has been growing incredibly exponentially, is polluting the heck out of our very home. We're poisoning the air, water, and land that we survive on. So we must, A, do something about that. B, our economies are messed up right now for a lot of reasons. We got to do something about that. And the great hope is the green hope, the ability to create sustainable economic conditions for not only the industrialized countries, but all the growing third world that envies us and wants to be like us. And that's the problem. If China's building a coal-fired power plant every week in the world, and it will surpass the United States for its CO2 and pollution, we've got to do something about that. And the pressures of food and water and land use and energy use all can be solved by a man's amazing imagination, creativity, inventiveness. And that's what we're all about at Green to Gold.
You know, Alan, it's interesting. Like you mentioned China, of course, they want what we have or what they think we have, or they think they want it, actually. And one can say, well, how could we deny them of having it? But the interesting thing is, and something that I've actually also really learned from you, too, is that it's not an either-or situation. We can have both, and we can have almost everything we have now, and in some cases even better, and have clean air, and have clean skies, and clean water. And that's the interesting thing that you are helping companies and entrepreneurs bring to market, those things that can help us have that, right?
Right. Look, our technological civilization, our incredible, what differentiates us from all the species on this planet is ability to invent. Otherwise, we'd be all running around in caves with or without loincloths and clubs right now, even if we hadn't even invented that. So we're the most inventive creature that we know in the universe right now, and it's on this planet. So we invented our way into the mess. We can invent our way out of it. And part of that is inventing in a different mode. Caring about social responsibility, environmental responsibility, embracing reuse of materials, diversion of materials, waste stream, thinking about clean energy, combining all those issues to make a green economy that's sustainable, and that's what we're all about. And in fact, we can solve all the problems that we've created. The opportunities are enormous. The United Nations has said that there's $26 trillion, some amazing figure, to reinvent everything that's conventional, that's causing our problems in the world. And then I toss in double that, because how about all the things we haven't even imagined yet or will be inventing or we are inventing right now that I see in our incubators and other research installations around the world, the stuff that's about to come that we didn't even dream of, that will change all of our lives for the better. And part of that is what we're all about. We treasure the independent inventor and entrepreneur, making them green, making them responsible, and changing the world for the better. And that's going to cause the jobs for the future. It's going to give future generations a new lease on life, the planet, ability to repair itself and to cleanse itself. And we need to do that. We've got this one home. Until we can launch billions of people to other, you know, life giving planets, we're stuck, and we better get our act together, and that's why it's important what we're doing. It's beyond just, nobody's making a buck on this at the nonprofit incubators. We want the entrepreneurs to succeed and make wealth, green wealth, and turn that into helping charities and paying taxes and creating new jobs. But all of us and our board of directors and our international advisors, that include some people that have made huge success in their lives in different fields, nobody gets paid to do this. They're all caring about the present and the future and future generations. So there's a lot of opportunity there.
Well, for those people who may have just joined us, we're talking to Alan Trattner, and at the moment we're talking about the Green to Gold incubators that he's created, and we're talking about green and recycling and green products and what that all means. And the interesting thing is I could just hear somebody listening saying, yeah, that's all good, but I still want to be able to drive my truck, and if these guys are going to tell me I can't drive my truck and use, and I know it's a gas guzzler, well, whether or not it's right to drive a truck and use all that gas or what have you, there is a situation that actually is better, and that is, for example, these people that would drive a, I mean, you know, I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just saying somebody that would drive a car like that, they also have kids or they have neighbors or family, et cetera. Well, not only is it making it a better place for the world, but what if there were a solution that some still drive a gas guzzler, and again, I'm taking out the judgment here, and put fuel into the tank that, like I saw in the movie Fuel, actually, I saw one of the protagonists stick his finger into what is fuel for the car and taste it. And in other words, this was fuel, and it's non-toxic, and so it's toxic. So if it spilled on the ground and their children, or it got on their children's hands or face or whatever, it wouldn't hurt them, and so they could still drive and use as much of that as they feel they need to at the moment, without hurting anybody.
Right, and I want to sway everyone from this issue. I don't feel there's a guilt trip. We are where we are because we're here. But the big thing that's going to happen is the transition, the huge transition that everyone can make in their home lives, in their office lives, their government. All that can happen if we do this right. And the markers, the goalposts for that are, like you just alluded to, bio-based. I really believe the bio-based economy is going to come into its own. That it is the natural cycle. It is the sequence that's going to happen. We're going to get closer to the land and more use of what bio-based products and recycled products. The fuels that you were mentioning, from biodiesel to ethanol to hydrogen, all these things are amazing. I once did a national public television program, two parts on alternative transportation, and I remember everybody was shocked in the studio because we had a UCLA hydrogen-powered car that was built by a bunch of students that were real clever in engineering, and it was actually running purely on hydrogen fuel, which is made from water. And I went to the back of the exhaust while it was running, and I took a cup and I put it up at the exhaust, and it poured out of there, and I drank it on camera. Everybody thought I was going to die, you know, and it was water, hot water vapor. It didn't taste great, but it was, you know, this is where the future is. So the solutions are there, technological. Political solutions are happening around the world. That's why the government is pushing this. And now that the Senate is poised on passing the Climate Change Act, all these things are going in the direction that we had hoped for 40, 50 years ago, and it's about time. Maybe, hopefully it's not too late, and I'm positive about that. So what we do as consumers, what we do in business, more importantly, the funniest thing is I want people to be entrepreneurs. The biggest trend in the United States, according to the Department of Commerce, is by the year 2014, that half, nearly half of all Americans will be self-employed. What a sea change. That means you're not working for someone else. You're working for yourself, out of your home, on the Internet, creating a new enterprise. What we're hoping to do is have more and more of those enterprises be green, sustainable, be socially responsible, produce green-collar jobs, as they call them. And that's the movement that's happening, and that's what we're all about at Green to Gold.
So at Green to Gold now, you have all kinds of very interesting things going on. I don't know how many of those you could talk about, but I've seen some really exciting products. And how many of them, what can you share about it? Give us a couple.
Well for instance, I mean, when you think about it, we have tens of thousands of projects underway that are in the stages of patent development and research and development and all kinds of wonderful, great stuff. I'm in the greatest candy store on the planet. I've always said that in front of audiences. It's so much fun because we have people inventing green toys and games and new natural foods and drinks. And we had a grandmother create an incredible all granola new cookie that is fat-free and sugar-free and healthy, but it knocks everybody's socks off in its taste. But it ranges from that to high technology, low technology, transportation, building materials. I know, Filippo, you saw one of the most incredible, I'm so proud as a father when these, kind of like a father when these are birthed. We have a new flashlight. We call it the greenest flashlight on Earth.
Yes.
It's called the Ecolite. Now, what makes it so extraordinary? Well, from the get-go, it was designed to be a sustainable product. Now, what does that mean? Well, first of all, there's no petroleum in it. Now, think about that. Almost every product, every flashlight you have on the planet is based on plastics and metals and all kinds of stuff that have gone into it that are from virgin materials that have a pollution effect on the environment. This is a bio-based plastic that came out of waste material from growing foods. Makes
See, this
the shell.
Is the thing.
It's an unbelievable product.
It looks like plastic.
Yeah,
it looks like plastic.
It is. Wait a minute. It is plastic. It's just a different kind of plastic. It floats. It's impervious to UV. It will last. The actual great product is that it eliminates batteries. One of the biggest problems on the planet is that it costs municipalities more to dispose of all of our toxic, harmful batteries than it does to cost them to buy them brand new. That's absurd. So what we do is we've got a new technology that replaces batteries altogether. You don't have to shake it. You don't have to plug it in. You don't have to crank it. The flashlight works with a photovoltaic solar cell that came from the space program to recharge it. It can be recharged from your computer of all things, from your wall socket, your car. It can go through 82 years, hundreds of thousands of recharges without affecting the medium that's holding the charge. It has an LED light that will go for hundreds of thousands of hours without ever breaking or burning out. It draws such little current. It has a high beam and a low beam. Everything's been computer designed. The rubber that's on the case to protect it in the fall and the lens is all 100% recycled rubber. And the product is just extraordinary in every facet and with multiple patents. And the greatest thing that happened since we just launched it is that one of the major big companies in the world that makes batteries and flashlights has already contacted us about trying to acquire these. So one of the great exit strategies for inventors and entrepreneurs is you develop something really terrific, you either take it to market or you license it, one of the two pathways. And this is what we do day in and day out and to help people all around the world. And it's just one little sample of the kind of things that people are creating and imagineering and crafting and are going to change our lives. And these are going to create new jobs, and they're going to boost this economy back up. And when I tell you about the solar projects and the geothermal projects and the biofuel projects and the wind projects and the amazing stuff that's happening, energy efficiency, we have one device that one of our inventors made called the Fan Miser. Got U.S. patents on it, has all the utilities have signed on to it, the state has given it rebates. In fact, it's so many good credits, tax credits, that when somebody buys it, it's almost dirt free. And when you install it on any place that has refrigeration or freezers, that means any school cafeteria, 7-Eleven, if you have a big enough one in your home, if you install this device, you can save up to as many 60-80% of the electrical energy consumed right away, constantly and forever. And this device is a breakthrough in its conservation, high efficiency. And this manufacturing of it is domestic, and the selling of it is domestic, and the utilization of it's domestic, and it's sold domestically, and it can go abroad, and it has amazing ramifications, one product. We have a wind company that is so unique that in its 15 months of existence, it went from zero with an idea to crafting new, creative, clever technology, picking up angel investors. We help with the financing and finding angel and venture capital and bank and debt funding. We got a board of directors. We got engineers together, the world-class top people in wind. And now the company is going out there, is setting up a factory in California. Probably within 2 years, they'll be employing at least 1,000 high-paid green new jobs. And then plus the ripple effect of all the supply chain for parts and everything, how that will affect the regional economy. And the potential of you crafting a green apple, just think if you have an Apple computer company come out of one of these incubators that ends up being worth billions of dollars and employing hundreds of thousands of people in high-paying jobs, the potential there in incubation is enormous. In fact, the fact is that someone starting an enterprise in the United States, if they go through incubation, mentorship, tutoring, and resources, has almost a 90% chance at success. It's exactly the flopped reverse of people trying to struggle and do it themselves in the marketplace. So that's why I become the Johnny Appleseed of incubators, okay?
No, you really have. And before I knew what an incubator was for eggs and babies, and but I didn't know that there was such a thing for businesses. And basically, So you're encouraging people. Well, actually, tell us, because this is good for everybody to know. Because if we're all going to be, if half of us are going to be entrepreneurs, and we'd like to see a lot of those be green companies, tell us how we could benefit from you.
Well, yeah, and first of all, we're planting and we're welcoming any community, any city, any nation that wants to embrace this incredible community-based nonprofit mixed tech, mixed use incubator model, green to gold incubators that bring with them amazing resources to power up their community and recharge the economy and go green and sustainable. So we've learned all the lessons. It's kind of turnkey. We have so many requests to do this. But that means your listeners that have great ideas, whether they be green at the beginning or not, we can make them green. We can make them sustainable because we know the materials science, we know the manufacturing sciences, we know the processes and methodology. We know how to take any idea and, for all intents and purposes, make it green. And that means that we will help you. So you come to us with a new computer keyboard or with a new energy system or something for your car or your home or your pet. We have lots of pet products that are green now. We know how to make it green and make it move into the marketplace. And the natural products industry is booming. In fact, this whole sector with the stock market so socked in the mouth right now, it's kind of funny. The big sector of green, sustainability, clean tech, is a lot of money has come pouring into that. Billions and billions of dollars are coming into the sector because that's the handwriting on the financial wall. This is where we're going. That's where governments are stimulating. That's where tax incentives are. That's where investors that are savvy are smart in getting into this. And we have people ringing off the phone all the time asking us what incubees are hot. That's what I call our clients inside the incubator, incubees. And they want to know, you know, how to get into them. And it's just amazing. And so much so that I've been asked, and I now serve on the California Coast Venture Forum and the Clean Business Investment Summit, and we just embraced a new chapter of an angel venture group that's going to be in our sector, and we're going to plant these next to each incubator. We almost have what is now called, Filippo, a green to gold community. It means you bring the incubator, you get the projects for kids to stimulate them in the educational system, and you get angel venture capital access and tutoring and boot camps, and you have workshops, and you have all kinds of stuff that comes together with this kind of program that will change a region's life. Detroit could use this. I grew up in Detroit. I was fostered by that. General Motors was my great hero. I won prizes, and they hadn't let me stay in their technical center. Was when I was 11 years old. I was with the world-class engineers. It's sad to see what happened to these companies. They made their bed, and they lay in it now, but the problem is we could change the complexion of all those engineers and workers and talented designers and artisans and everyone that's working on these kinds of things in manufacturing if they would just pick up the banner of creating new ideas and doing them in a sustainable, socially responsible, environmentally responsible manner.
Alan, you're truly helping people change the way they look at green and look at green businesses and green products. And I do know that when you say anything, any product, you do mean anything. And anything from candy to toys to including adult products.
That is true. We have condoms and we have all kinds of other products for safety and every other purpose that go through this same process of an evaluation and assessment of how to make the packaging 100% recycled materials and then recyclable. How can the product be used in a better way? Could it be made from is there a substitute for petroleum, for latex that comes out of bio-based? And guess what? There is. And pretty amazing. And so all these kinds of things are potential. I so far have not yet come across a product that we couldn't green in some manner, if not 100%. And that's very encouraging. So the opportunity is there. All I want your people to do is come up with these great ideas for both enterprises and services. It isn't just products, by the way. It's also services. And you'd be amazed what's going on about doing clean energy assessments and energy audits and water conservation and building materials. We have the most staggering type of building material, concrete, that's aerated, that is fireproof, that is structurally sound for earthquakes, doesn't sound so remarkable. It's almost like you're in a soundproof room, and it's just extraordinarily light. These kinds of things are going to revolutionize the world. And again, we're not the big laboratories. We're not the IBMs of the world. We're not the big university laboratories. What we're talking about is the great driver of this economy, the American economy, free enterprise system, and the rest of the world, and that is the independent individual inventor, entrepreneur with the great ideas that have changed the whole world and have powered us up. And I always call our organization, it's kind of funny, I say that we're the largest R&D department in the United States, because there's nobody that has 40,000 inventors on their, you know, payroll. So
all over the world. Saying this is not the IBMs of the world, but you know, they certainly can start here, like you were talking about that wind company. They start here, and you're helping them build for not only for them, but for a better everybody, for a better world.
By the way, Filippo, I want your listeners to remember, as green consumers, however you view that, if you have the choice within your economic means to purchase a green product or service, please do so. That little change is changing the dynamics of the whole planet, and it makes these companies, these new products, these new planet-saving products more viable. It actually is going to ensure that you have a job, and your children have jobs, and that the schools will be open, and that the parks will continue to be open, and that all the things that keep going, if you just make, as we're transitioning into this green economy, you need to become a conscientious green consumer, wherever you can make the change. Cosmetics, your shoes, your pet products. It's so important that you support the green economy.
And before long, they won't be as expensive, and in some cases might even be cheaper. And in the long run, they are less expensive because the other products cost us in so many ways. And everything you mentioned, I mean, we'll have air to breathe. We'll have water to drink. That's a factor that plays in as well. Alan, tell everybody how they can get a hold of you or learn more about your organization.
Well, it's pretty simple. First of all, for the Children's Project, if you're interested in how we're trying to encourage kids to think creative, imaginatively, be entrepreneurial, inventive, and socially, environmentally responsible, this is anti-gang, anti-drug, self-esteem, a-go-go. It's hippiekids.org. And it's pretty easy. Just go to our website and it tells you what kind of programs. But for the green to gold, that's all.
Well, hold on. But Yippie is spelled YIPEE, right?
Yep. YippieKids.org.
Okay.
And then green to gold, the famous number 2, green squared, green2gold.org is the simple home for our little website that tells you how to invent the future green.
Wonderful. Yes?
And what happens is that people can join us. It's a membership relationship in which everybody signs a mutual confidentiality agreement so we can protect the intellectual property of patents and copyrights and trade secrets and trademarks and et cetera. And that allows us to actually function and interact with people and have our workshops and brainstorm together. And it's just the juiciest stuff that we do, is bringing creative people together, both in the incubator and at the workshops I travel around doing. So you join the institution, you become a member, you get this wonderful international monthly newsletter, and you get all this free mentoring and tutoring. And if you want, you can be incubated on-site in one of our incubators or virtually. You can be virtually incubated, and I have made people millionaires with their ideas, and I've never met them. We've certainly communicated and talked by phone and email and mail, but there are many people around the world that have followed our process and allowed us to help them and encourage them and tutor them, and they've gone to great success, and it's just one of the most satisfying things in the world.
It's the greatest deal in town for anybody that gets to be a part of this, and it's great for everybody. It's good for all. And Alan, there's so much that I would have liked to speak to you more about, the children projects, and there's just so much. And the good news is that I've come to know you, and we will also be working on a couple projects together that I'm excited about that hopefully we'll get to share soon, but that we'll get to interview you and help put you out there in front of more people, because everybody should know about you and the products and the incubators,
and all that is coming down the pike thanks to you. So want to thank Alan Tratner for being on the show, and please promise you'll come back real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for your show, Filippo, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Take care. Well,
that there's just so much there. There's just so much. And you know, our next segment is with Stacey Hess, who's our publicist and the head of Positive PR LA. However, I have to say that our segment is called The Luminary List. He could certainly be on that luminary list, wouldn't you say, Stacey?
Absolutely. I love all the green stuff. Green is the color, you know.
Green is it. And you're wearing green today.
I'm wearing green today. Yeah. So, before we get to the luminary, though, I want to talk a little bit about all the cool green stuff, because there was a concert this weekend on Saturday at Universal City Walk.
Yes, there was.
You were there. And Corey Feldman has a band called Truth Movement, and Corey is really into the green world and environment, and he's an amazing supporter of clean, sustainable fuels. And so what was exciting about this concert on Saturday night is that it was the first time at Universal City Walk that a concert has ever been run on completely clean, sustainable sources of energy. So we took the entire concert off the traditional power grid, and we ran both Truth Movement and the opening band on biodiesel generators donated by At Power from right here in Los Angeles. So it was a pretty amazing thing, and Truth Movement is a pretty tech-heavy show, so lots of lights, lots of sound, lots of lasers, and it ran completely on clean, sustainable biofuels.
And, you know, that's interesting because it ties in what I was saying earlier, that nobody was the wiser except that you all told us, or Corey told us during the show, and I, of course, knew because of you. Here we were watching all kinds of things going on, acrobats, and, of course, all the lights of Universal City Walk that were being powered normally. And then all of a sudden, the band starts, and now we know that the lights are not being powered by the traditional grid. But you can't tell the difference. It's still, I mean, it's all happening.
Right, it's amazing.
And it's clean, and
yeah,
it's happy.
Clean, sustainable, and, yeah, so it's really amazing. It's proof that you really can, and that's what Truth Movement wants to do, is prove that we can reduce the behemoth carbon footprint that rock concerts are known for. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so it was pretty exciting.
So are they our luminary today?
No, that's not our luminary today. Although certainly Truth Movement is of luminary quality. But no, that's not who we're going to talk about today. So it was a rough week, you know. We lost some pretty powerful people this week.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was Farrah Fawcett, who was my luminary.
Ah.
And she's a luminary in life, obviously, but I was reading an article just earlier today that even in death, she continues to be a luminary. She left several thousands of dollars of her fortune to support women who are victims of domestic violence. And as you know, several years ago, she was in the film The Burning Bed, and she played a woman who was a victim of domestic violence, and she's been a big supporter of that for many, many years. And as part of her will, she left several thousand dollars to different organizations around the country that take care of women that are also victims of domestic violence. So,
wow.
You know, you don't luminaries shine on, I suppose, is the lesson here.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
And thank you. We talked about Michael Jackson at the beginning of the show, and now it's great to have you mention Farrah Fawcett. It's perfect.
Yeah. So,
as if we know what we're doing here.
It's really amazing.
Well, I mean, we do.
Sometimes.
We do.
But sometimes it appears that we do.
But we didn't get to talk about this, is what I mean, and here we are.
Completely, you know, lucky accidental.
Well, actually, that's beautiful. Stacey, thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
It's always a pleasure.
It is always a pleasure. It's great fun, isn't it?
Stacey Hess with our luminary list and our publicist. And now we have, gosh, you know, we've been calling her our cosmic advisor, but she is so much more to us and to the world that knows her and to the world that doesn't know her yet. She is Dorothy Lee, who brings us the State of the Universe address every week. And it's one of some people's favorite segments in the show. So what have you today for us?
Relationships.
Uh-oh.
I've observed that many relationships are shifting and changing rather dramatically with the energies that are coming into the planet right now. No matter how evolved we think we are, everyone's stuff is coming up right now, and many long-term relationships are ending and new ones are beginning. We're presently going through major personal, government, financial, and religious shifts while being prepared for the magnificent planetary shift that's occurring right now. And our closest relationships are being challenged by these shifts. I believe that one of the primary reasons for incarnating on Earth is to see how quickly we can master the art of mutually beneficial relationships. Therefore, I always ask my clients if they are in positive, passionate, intimate, and mutually beneficial interpersonal relationships. Most people think I'm talking about romantic relationships when I ask this question, and way too many say no, they are not. I know that mastering the art of intimate relationships is one of the most important things we can do as spiritual beings having a human experience. Wikipedia gives this definition for relationship. An intimate relationship is a particularly close interpersonal relationship. It is a relationship in which the participants know or trust one another very well, or are confident of one another, are a relationship in which there is physical or emotional intimacy. I agree with this definition, and I'm fortunate to now have many emotionally intimate interpersonal relationships in my life. I have this kind of relationship with my daughter, my roommate, my extended soul family, and with my co-creators of the many projects that I'm involved in. These associations are based on emotions like loving one another, liking one another, regular business interactions, or some other type of social commitment. Humans' interpersonal relationships take place in a great variety of contexts, such as family, friends, marriage, lovers, acquaintances, work, clubs, neighborhoods, and churches. They may be regulated by law, custom or mutual agreement, and they are the basis of social groups and society as a whole. Although humans are fundamentally social creatures, interpersonal relationships aren't always healthy, and I'd like to offer a very simple suggestion which I believe will make our relationships healthier. Let us begin to actually relate to one another rather than go into reaction. This will solve many of the relationship challenges that exist between human beings. Let us begin to treat one another with kindness and compassion. In other words, let us relate to others the way we would like for them to relate to us. It is simple, really. But we humans have a tendency to complicate even the simplest things. I ask you to look at your relationships and discover whether you're having the kind of happy, healthy, mutual, beneficial relationship that you deserve, or if you're reacting the way you've been taught to react by family and or by the programming society pushes upon us. What I know is this. Our relationships can become very healthy and happy if we begin to relate to one another instead of to react. So please, dear friends, choose to treat the people in your life the way you would like to be treated. And you will see your relationships transform. Let us be kinder to one another and to the ones we love. Let us choose love and peace. And until next week, please choose to love yourself enough to make very conscious and elegant choices. And please know that you are loved, you are lovable, and you are loved.
Wow, that's amazing. And it's interesting that she started by saying, Dorothy, that you started by saying that relationships are not just the romantic ones. We could be having a relationship with the checkout person at the store.
We are. We are.
Especially if
we are relating and not reacting, we're having a relationship.
Okay. Interesting. Well, thank you for bringing that home and reminding us about that. That's actually very important for all of us. That's like what we talked about today, sustainable world, sustainable relationships.
Yes.
And not reacting to each other. Thank you, Dorothy Lee, our cosmic advisor, and so much more. Well, friends, that is our show for today. We'd like to thank once again our guest, Alan Trattner. And remember, please go to his website and learn more about him by clicking on the links that you will find there for him. He was a great guest and can't wait to have him on again. I look forward, and we all look forward, to being together again with you next week when our guest will be Scott Bloom. He has written a book called Waiting for Autumn. And one of our producers, John Snow, read the book and said, Filippo, we have to interview Scott Bloom on the show. And I said, well, you know, let me read the book. And it's on Hay House. And I read the book and tears flowed, and it was just amazing. And I said, of course we have to have him on the show. What made you even ask the question? You could have just said it. So that's going to be a show not to be missed. I'm looking forward to it myself. Remember, you can keep the conversation during the week going by visiting us and writing us on our website at Life Changes with Filippo. And also you can connect with us on our Life Changes with Filippo Facebook fan page, and for that matter, on our own personal Facebook pages. We've made so many friends throughout this short time already, and it's become so much fun. And our family is growing, especially after the success of our last week's live event, our very first live event. And I didn't talk again about that, but you know, everything's about Michael Jackson, so at the beginning we had to talk about that. So we'll talk more about that next week, because we're going to have more in the next couple weeks here in Los Angeles and all over. So today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems. Change your water, change your life. And, of course, Love and Miracles. To learn more about them, visit our sponsor page on our website and click on their links. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and it has been my pleasure being of service by hosting Life Changes with Filippo today. John, why are you making fun of me? I don't understand.
I don't know.
I'm trying to.
I feel like you must have been drinking. I've never seen you fumble over words so much.
Yeah. I haven't been drinking. So to answer the question, I, along with our guest hosts, Dorothy Lee and Stacey Hess, our show producers, Mark Skelton, John Snow, and Mark Leger, and our engineer, Seth, thank you for joining us and being part of this show and being part of the change we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everybody.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and visit us on the web at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, FILIPPO.com. And follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here next week as we graciously embrace the only constant, life changes.